This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The United Nations has just published a report on poverty in the U.S. based on a fact-finding tour that included parts of the Ohio Valley. The UN report found Americans live shorter, sicker lives than do citizens of all other rich democracies. Becca Schimmel has more.
The UN report says that of the 40 million poor Americans, about 5.3 million live in, quote, third world conditions of absolute poverty. The study also suggests the recent tax reform bill will worsen the situation for U.S. citizens and ensure that the country remains the most unequal society in the developed world. UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Philip Alston says poverty has significant human rights implications.
I think that if people are really living in very poor circumstances, their ability to exercise a lot of their basic civil rights is greatly impaired.
The report finds the U.S. has the highest rate of income inequality among Western countries. In 2018, the country had more than 25% of the world's billionaires. Alston also found the U.S. doesn't provide adequate funding to address its opioid crisis. The country also has one of the lowest voter turnout rates among developed countries, with just a little more than half of the population casting ballots in the 2016 presidential election. Alston says it's the responsibility of the government to make sure its people are able to live with dignity. He hopes this report will enlighten leaders in the U.S. to improve the lives of those in poverty.
I think one of my challenges, to the extent that I find really serious problems, is to shed light on those, put the spotlight on them, and hopefully a government that really cares would then respond and try to address those problems.
Some of the report's suggestions include reducing the incarcerated population, funding social programs, recognizing a right to health care, and reducing income inequality. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Students and residents celebrated completion of a pilot arts program as the school year wraps up at Magnolia High School in Wetzel County. Glennis Board stopped in for a reception and toured an art installation students and a resident artist created.
The Wetzel Art Museum in New Martinsville is housing an immersive video art installation Magnolia High School students conceived of and created under tutelage of area artist Michael McCowan.
The whole thing was about the students presenting their life, their views of growing up in Wetzel County, growing up in New Martinsville, growing up in West Virginia. So what we've done is we've basically packaged it. Like, we've created this video installation so that you can see their POV, their points of view.
McCowan is an accomplished artist and filmmaker, a Magnolia High alum, and an art professor at Wheeling Jesuit University. He says the artistic process at Magnolia began with research about Wetzel County and a list of questions for students about what life is like in the Ohio Valley.
So one of the things that they talked about a lot was confinement. And that confinement is about being in the Ohio Valley. It's about being in a small place. It's about not having a lot of resources and not a lot of experiences available to you.
McCowan says the challenge was to turn abstract ideas into art. With some support from the shop class at the high school, students built a shed with corrugated metal, lumber, and an earth floor. You can walk through it. Video footage of day-in-the-life scenes are embedded into screens in the floor and projected on a drop-cloth ceiling. Student Brina Napier says she looked forward to working on the year-long project every week.
I'm in ninth grade, a freshman, well, now sophomore, but at Magnolia High School.
Along with some 30 classmates, Napier collected footage of moments in her everyday life.
Of streams, of close-ups of moss, lighting, my goats, a big part of my goats. Uh-huh. Goats are my life, and I don't think I could live without them.
It's so unfiltered, and it's so raw, and it's so pure. And that, I think that's the strength of everything that we've done here.
They were able to really display their emotions on how they feel about living in this community, what they like, what they don't like, what they're sad about, what they're happy about. And that's really the essence of art.
Carmela Nickens is the manager of the Rural Arts Collaborative, who brought the project to Magnolia. She says this is the first video installation project she's seen come from the program that she founded 6 years ago. The Rural Arts Collaborative was founded in 2012 in Pennsylvania, embedding artists in schools. Musicians, dancers, painters, and ceramicists often create public works of art with students. Artists are embedded now in 20 schools in Pennsylvania. And this is the first time the project made its way into West Virginia. Niggins says pairing students and artists allows for critical creative development in regions that need it.
And I know what the arts can do for students in so many ways. It can help them succeed and help them be themselves. It's a new way of thinking, being, and doing for students.
Next year, artists will embed in schools in the Northern Panhandle. Weir High School, Brook Middle School, John Marshall High School, and across the river in Ohio, in Bel Air Middle School. The program is funded by the Benedum Foundation and locally by Ogilby Institute. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Ford in New Martinsville.
It's LGBT Pride Month, and this has Trey Kay, host of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them podcast, thinking about the us and them dynamic between gay and straight people in West Virginia. In the latest episode, Trey reflects on how his perspective of gay and lesbian people has changed over the years since he was a high school student in Charleston back in the late 70s. Back then, he came to know Ted Brightwell, one of Charleston's legendary drag queens who performed at the Grand Palace, one of Charleston's few gay bars located away from the center of town. Here's an excerpt from the latest Us and Them episode, Revisiting the Grand Palace, which takes us back to a time West Virginians were much less accepting of gay people.
When I was in high school, contempt for gay people was just part of the landscape. My buddies and I used to drive by the Grand Palace, the gay bar, and we'd shout, "Faggot!" out the car window. Most of my friends didn't know it, but I went to that bar once. It was back in 1979. I was 17, and I was in a production of Jesus Christ Superstar. One night after rehearsal, some of the women in the cast wanted to go dancing at the palace. My buddies said, "No way." One of them said, "That's the fag bar." But the women said the palace had the best dance floor in town. It lights up like in Saturday Night Fever. So we reluctantly followed them into what we imagined to be our town's very own Sodom and Gomorrah. When we got inside, the women we were chasing were already out on the dance floor. The rest of the clientele were mostly men jumping, twirling, and grinding their hips into one another. I tried not to stare. I was expecting effeminate, girly men, but there were more than a few dudes who without a doubt could kick my ass. There were tough-looking guys decked out in leather, chains, and studs like the biker dude and the Village People. I slipped off to the men's room. It was packed. The guy in the next urinal was a blonde bombshell in drag. He looked just like Marilyn Monroe. I kept asking myself, why is he doing this? Who'd have the courage to dress in drag in the middle of Appalachia in the 1970s? More than 30 years later, I still wondered. And I asked my friend, Ted Brightwell, why he did it.
I came out with a vengeance. So therefore, this is my home. This is where I live. This is where I'm going to practice my profession. And as a young idealist, I felt that, I can be defensive about that a little bit. And I'm going to say, I'm going to fight for my rights. And I felt very strongly about that. And maybe sometimes as you're young and idealistic, you might take things to an extreme. I mean, yes, there were times when I was flamboyantly walking down the street. Look at me. You know, I'm just a big old homo. But at the same time, in my mind, as a young person, I'm thinking, okay, they're looking at me. And yeah, they can make fun of me. I don't care. But I'm still here and I'm not leaving. So you got to get used to it.
Ted's not from West Virginia. His parents are, but his dad was in the military and they moved around a lot. Ted came here to go to college, and he's done well since then. When he and I met for a walk around town recently, I met him in front of his hair salon, the Visions Day Spa. The spa sits on picturesque tree-lined Capitol Street, right in the heart of Charleston. It's surrounded by a hip bookstore, boutique lawyer offices, and a gourmet ice cream parlor. But doing hair wasn't Ted's career plan when he came to Charleston to go to college.
At the time, I thought I wanted to be a teacher, and then decided that I wasn't really cut out to be a teacher. And at that time, I kind of discovered who and what I was, and I kind of thought being gay in the school system was probably not the best idea.
When Ted did his student teaching, it didn't go well.
Just walking down the halls, like at a high school, I would hear, can I say fag? Mm-hmm. Okay. I would hear, you know, faggot. And I'm thinking, am I that obvious? Which I probably was. But at the same time, so I thought, do I want to subject myself to that every day in a career?
Ted became a hairdresser instead. It seemed like an acceptable job for a gay man. I think it must have been awful to be harassed so much that you change careers. But Ted says he loves being a hairdresser, and he downplays how badly some people have treated him.
I can't say that I had any kind of a hard time coming out by any means. I never felt threatened or in fear of my life walking down the street. And I was pretty, you know, pretty out. We used to wear our fake fur coats and have just a tiny little bit of makeup on, carry our man bag in 1974, which you just didn't do. And I had to endure, you know, people talking about us and saying things and this, that, and the other. But I never felt threatened. But I was discriminated against.
Ted says he was fired from a bartending job because he was gay. And he was kicked out of two apartments.
The landlords could come up and say, I don't want your kind here.
What would they say?
Exactly that. I don't want your kind here. So you have to move.
And it was clear your kind meant a homosexual.
Yes. Absolutely. And at that time, I was young and I won't say totally naive, but it hurt my feelings. It devastated me. I was working at the time as a bartender, and one of the guys, his father lived across the street from this apartment, and he said, I can find you this apartment. The guy's pretty cool. And I lived in that basement apartment for years, because I did not want to subject myself to that again. Even though I was doing much better, I lived in this dump, you know, and finally my friends had to convince me to move out.
Where are we walking to now? Tell us.
We are walking to what used to be the Grand Palace, which the building is no longer there.
So we arrive at the place where the palace once stood, right next to the I-64 on-ramp. And I need to get something off my chest.
Okay.
So I'm confessing that, you know, in those years when I was a teenager, you know, you're out with your buddies and you're hot rodding around and whatnot. And I remember we would drive up this ramp and we would shout over the rail at the Grand Palace, faggot! And I'm kind of embarrassed about that.
Did you throw eggs?
No, I didn't throw eggs.
Did you throw beer bottles?
I didn't do that.
Okay, well, but people did throw eggs and throw beer bottles. Now, I can't say that I know anybody that ever got seriously injured from that. Of course, that is dangerous. But I can remember one time myself coming through there, and all of a sudden we were walking by the wall, and we hear this splat, followed by faggot. And it's like, oh, girl, they're throwing eggs at us. Run. And, of course, we were in drag, so it's like, they can't hit us. Can't hit us with an egg. You know, that'll mess up this makeup I spent 2 hours on.
I never threw eggs, but I'm ashamed of what I did do. I'd like to think that in the 30 years since then, I've grown up, and I kind of feel like the rest of us have too. Today, Charleston has a gay pride parade. Men in drag march down the street, and people don't throw bottles. They line up and cheer, kind of like they do for the annual Shriners Parade. Today, gay people can get married in West Virginia, and Ted thinks that maybe one reason that's true is that guys like him were so out so early in the battle.
I like to think I helped, at least in this area. I tell the young kids all the time when they talk to me, I'm 60 years old now, so the 21-year-olds that I talk to, we'll talk about things. And I said, honey, you couldn't walk down the street holding your boyfriend's hand if it hadn't been for me, you know? So just respect me, damn it.
You can download the full episode of the Us and Them podcast on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.